This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Broadcasting live on the Civic Media Radio Network, it's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Good to be with you today throughout the network here in AM 950, Minneapolis, St. Paul land, as well as also at WAUK 540 AM and 101 FM, The Shaw, as well as Devil Radio 92.7 FM in Madison, WTTN 1580 AM Columbus. Hello, Madison. Hello, Waukesha. Hello, Milwaukee. Good to have you with us today. A lot to get to. We are going to have your first, if you're from Minneapolis, St. Paul, you already hate him. But for all the rest of the people out there, have I got a treat for you. Jeff Stein, our national and presidential expert that we've had on the show here in Minneapolis, St. Paul for 12 years. He is. Wow. He is going to join us today at about 3:35 to talk national and presidential news. I want to actually talk a little bit about that Nebraska one race, because that was actually really interesting.
The generic congressional polling has gotten really tight, too, over the past few days.
It has. And well, and actually, in a lot of cases, it's much more favoring the Democrats.
Yes.
So we'll talk to him about that also, the Georgia court case against Trump, because that actually, if they go through with it, there is just no way in the planet they're not going to find him guilty. I mean, they've got him on tape. We need you to find a few more ballots. Please, especially ones with cheese and ketchup. Oh, I love those. I'm not sure. Not actually actual audio from Donald Trump. Just FYI. Got great news, Brett. Apparently, we have our first hate call of the new stations. Why are you rushing? Give it some time. You'll find plenty of reasons to hate me. We have, yeah, indeed, I guess we've upset the pro AR-15 liberals, both of them. So I yesterday's show, sorry, our bad. Good luck with all that, by the way. You know, light switch sort of stuff going on there. But you know, trust me, I already know a lot of people are you know, you're going to get a lot of people who are, how dare you? It's part of the gig, and For the people, the conservatives that want to call in and talk about how much you need to take this guy off the air, let me just, from the bottom of the heart, I don't care. I don't care. I do not care. Absolutely not. Let's step back for a quick second. Take a look at your standard Republican today. I've said this a lot in the Minneapolis, St. Paul. Here it is for the first time for you guys along the network. The standard Republican could walk into his house, find his wife or husband having sex with Donald Trump, and the first words out of their mouth will be, damn Democrats. It's true. It's true. This is who they are. They're brainwashed. They cannot actually say reality. They have convinced themselves of this. And along with that delusion has come this warped idea of what the right thinks debate is. Now, this is not everyone. There are plenty of conservatives I talk with who bring points and I disagree with them and I'll counterpoint and we'll talk about things. And yeah, there are some, but a lot of conservatives today think debate is them kicking in the door of your house, going to the bathroom in the middle of your living room floor, pointing to it with a smile on their face and saying, you have to like it. And that is who these people are. I mean, it really is. That is most of these, you know, loon ball far rightos. You don't add anything to my life. You know, if you're just here to just scream, I'm not going to oblige you. Whether it's me here or it's the people that follow me on Twitter and Facebook, and there's, you know, quite a few people there, and I'm very grateful for all of them. Yeah, I'm going to save them the time. You add nothing of value. You're just looking for attention, and I'm not going to give it to you. So, yeah, you can call in and say, hey, I hate that guy. Well, some days I hate me too. That's why I love chamomile tea. No, this is not just about selling chamomile tea, although delicious. No, I just, you know, there are plenty of reasons to dislike me. If you're calling in on the first day saying, I hate him. Well, that I think we all know what that means, is that it's just who you are, dude. That has nothing to do with me. It's just you're just angry at someone who's not spewing exactly what you agree. And you go snuggle up to Tucker on that one, because I'm not going to help you. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. You are more than welcome to give us a call if you so desire. I want to say to some of the new listeners who have followed me on at Matt McNeil Show on Twitter, Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show, that's on Facebook. I got a few people that actually sent me some very nice notes about my son, who, as I mentioned yesterday, was in Highland Park for the parade when the psychopath opened fire, killing six people and wounding dozens in Highland Park, Chicago. Seven people. In Highland Park, Chicago. He did get back last night. He did come home, and I was able to give my son's girlfriend, who's from Highland Park, a very nice long hug and let her know how much she is loved. She's obviously very heartbroken that this has happened. And understandably, and all my best goes out to all the people in Highland Park, in as well as in Madison, and I'll get to that here in just a second. Because, you know, this guy was looking to do more damage. But to all the people who are out there saying all my best to your son, thank you. Thank you very much. Once again, he is home. He is safe. And we're very grateful for that. Going to the latest update here on the shooting, the man charged with killing seven people in the Independence Day parade confessed to police that he unleashed the hail of bullets from the rooftop in suburban Chicago, then fled to Madison, Wisconsin, where he contemplated shooting up another event there, said authorities. The gunman turned back to Illinois, where he was later arrested after deciding he was not prepared to pull off a shooting in Wisconsin. Lake County Major Crime Task Force spokesman Christopher Covelli said in a news conference following the bond hearing. An Illinois judge ordered the suspect to be held without bail. Lake County Assistant State Attorney Ben Dillon said the gunman looked down his sights, aimed, and fired at people across the street, killing seven, wounding more than two dozen. He left the shells of 83 bullets and three ammunition magazines on the rooftop. The parade shooting left another American community, this time in the affluent Highland Park area, home to about 30,000 people near the Lake Michigan shore, reeling. Hundreds of marchers, parents, and children fled in the panic. Some of the wounded, by the way, remain critical, Covelli said, and the death toll rate could rise. Clearly, yeah, you think about this. The desire by this individual to cause more chaos and you know, all my best, all my prayers to the people of Highland Park, and a big sigh of relief for Madison that they weren't also in that chaos on that day. Yeah, Cremo is going to he's going to go to jail for the rest of his life, thank God. But at the same time, it's time we ban these assault weapons, that's for sure. I'll tell you what, let's go to the phones. Mark in Madison, he wanted to chime in this afternoon. Mark, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Oh, thanks a lot. Actually, it's from Prairie to Sack, so it's usually Mark from the Sack when I call him to the devil's side.
No problem. Mark from the Sack.
And on the firearms thing, to start out with, I mean, that back in 1974, I got a thing from Outdoor Life Book Club talking about firearms, that assault rifle. And it kind of closed out with they're good for military style of target and for target shooting, but that's what they're used for. I mean, and not really much use in civilian hands. I mean, they're a military style weapon.
Yes.
But as far as the haters out there, I mean, the haters, kind of troll the other sites. I mean, I saw one of our haters that posts and attacks me, saying I'm unintelligent on the devil's site. Some of those he made the comment about a woman had posted something about women with having like an ovarian cyst can't and being pregnant at the same time can't receive treatment because it would put the fetus at risk, and he was calling BS to that. I mean, these haters are out there. They're out there spewing this stuff.
Let's just put it correctly if I can. And thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. The thing that we have to just remember is these guys are just, they want attention. Okay, let's go back. Let's go back to 2008 when John McCain was running. And you all of a sudden had people going, he's a secret Muslim. And all of a sudden people started saying, wait a second here. Look at all the cameras turning to the psychopath screaming like a demented child. And that became the next year. Where's his birth certificate? Remember that? Oh, I remember that. Where happened to all those people that said they were going to find out the truth? All that stuff. Oh, that's right. No, they're just, they don't have anything valid to share. So they scream at the top of their lungs and they act as if that's you know, somehow competent debate. And the thing which is funny is they think when you block them, I won. He doesn't want to debate me. No, dude, let me explain something to you, especially on social media. I have in a handful of words, written words, you're not even hearing you speak, just seeing what you have written, determined that you offer nothing of value to me, to my followers, to the listeners. You don't. You seriously don't. You're a pathetic loser that basically is like, I want to scream my opinions in everyone's faces. You see, I'm intelligent. No, you're not. You know, you're just not. And yeah, you know, so you can scream and upset all this stuff. All you want is, you're pathetic. You want my attention. You want validity. And this is the thing that burns you up deep inside. I'm not going to give it to you. I'm not going to give you that validity. Just not going to happen. So whether that's hanging up on an idiot or blocking them, my life is better for doing so. See? Progress. By the way, when we come on back, I had the gun didn't do anything guy. I'll give you that response to that. The nuanced argument that the guns haven't become sentient, thank God. I'll tell you how you get back at that. Plus one of the Supreme Court rulings as well. I'll touch on that as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Hello, Waukesha. Hello, Madison. Hello, Milwaukee. Hello, Minneapolis, St. Paul. I'll give you a big smooch with some tongue. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So I had, after I did the gun thing, I had the person get in touch with me. He's like, this is you. You said the gun didn't do anything. Someone fired the gun. So, ha, got you. Dude, first of all, let's be honest. Let's all be grateful the sentient status of guns has not come to fruition, that guns have not become sentient alive beings, because the first person the guns are going to be PO'd at are the people that have been fondling them like sex toys for the last 40 years. You guys and your perv kind of, oh, my lovely gun. Yeah, that gun's not going to be too happy with you. Let's just be honest. You've been violating that sucker. Now, that being said, no, it doesn't work that way. And let's just take the flamethrower, because you know what? I could have a flamethrower right here in the studio. Well, kind of already do, but I could have a flamethrower here in the studio, put that sucker in the corner and well, no one has done anything. Now it's just a flamethrower, but in the hands of an arsonist, well, guess what? Flame on, Johnny Storm. It's going to get a little rough out there. And all of a sudden he's burning down buildings and burning people alive. I don't think you say to yourself, hey, don't criticize the flamethrower. It's the guy that's the problem. Well, no, I think we all can understand the guy is the problem, but the vehicle of his annihilation is the flamethrower, correct? Correct. Let's go with grenades. I have thrown a grenade. Oh, that was when I really realized there was no going to be no Major League Baseball career for me. When I was in the military and I actually had to throw a grenade. Yikes. Not going to be playing outfield this year, am I? The grenade in a movie, it blows up and guy 5 feet away from him is like, whew, that was close. Dude, if you're 5 feet away from a grenade, goodbye to a good portion of your body. I mean, they are designed, it's a metal ball that is designed to fragment when the explosion inside goes off. It cuts things to shreds. I did throw that grenade pretty far. There was a plexiglass window way back in the viewing area, that you could hear the little shards like 100 yards behind us hitting it. We're behind a barrier. No, you can't just sit there and say, well, your gun didn't do anything. No, the gun allowed that psychopath to become the as lethal as possible. Hands down. And we regulate fertilizers after Oklahoma City. We regulate cough medicine. We don't allow go-karts on the highway. I think we can honestly say, and the reason why is because we can't trust people with those things. We can't trust people with fertilizers. They might blow up a building. We can't trust people with cough medicine. They might make drugs. We can't trust people with go-karts on the highway because they're going to get themselves or someone else killed. And shouldn't we have the same level of standard common sense when it comes to AR-15s? Just me. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So there's a lot of rulings from the Supreme Court this last time around, which really were like, I think the most telling one, or not the most, the most telling one was obviously the overturning of Roe v. Wade, but one of the ones that I think that went under the radar quite a bit was Kennedy versus Bremerton. This is the praying at a public school is now legal ruling. And it's what's interesting is the way, and I'm going to just be honest, the way that the Supreme Court justices outright lied about what this prayer was. Their argument said, their decision said, this was private and quiet. My God, there's video of it where it's loud and it's not private. It's right there out on the middle of the field. And already multiple coaches have said, oh, now I can force my kids into a Christian prayer. And it is wildly insane that this would be passed, that this is how the finding would go. This is a direct violation of separation of church and state, a taxpayer-funded public school. And now you can and go out there and just pray whenever you want to pray. Have a school leader lead a prayer with people who they say they can leave if they want to, but you know, we already know the place. If you don't go out there and pray with the coach, you're not playing that weekend. And until you show up and do pray with the coach, you're not going to be playing. You're not a starter. That's how it goes. It falls under, we got a little preview of that here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, with a school district known as the Anoka-Hennepin County School District, where about 10 years ago, a bunch of far-right loon balls got on the school board and gutted all their anti-bullying laws for the school under the argument is that when someone is screaming in an LGBTQ plus face, that basically, if they're screaming about, you know, their religion tells them they're going to burn in hell, that you can't stop that because that's freedom of speech and freedom of religion, and the school can't stop in the way. And actually went out there to lay down rules that said teachers couldn't intervene, you could not stop it. It was pro-bullying 101, and it led to a lot of dead kids. It led to a lot of dead kids who my impression was, and this was the impression I had, is the people behind this were like, yay, we're getting them. I mean, it was really evil, sick, twisted people that were doing this. And, you know, this is, it was something that finally they got challenged in court, and they lost and lost badly, that, they, you know, you have to basically try to protect the students in your school. You can't let people bully them to death. And of course, all the people behind it either lost their re-election or retired and ran away before the school district had to pay off a ton of money to individuals that had been wronged. But this is the same exact thing. It's the arguments like, wow, gee, Willikers, there's freedom of speech and there's separation of church and state. Well, we're going to argue that the freedom of speech and the freedom of religion overrule the separation of church and state. And that's lunacy. Because your argument then forces religion on people. And yeah, I don't know if you've heard the history of the Christian church. It's got a lot of hate in there. And there's a lot of people who justifiably do not want anything to do with the Christian faith. So to all of a sudden put that out there under the freedom of speech, well, if someone says, I don't want to be there for that, that's their right. And so this ruling, it's insanity. I like I said, though, I think the craziest part about that ruling, absolutely the craziest part about that ruling, was the fact that the justices themselves lied about what was going on, saying that this was private and quiet prayer. No, it wasn't. No one who has seen these prayers this coach was doing would describe them as private and quiet in the least bit. And of course, there's the last little thing I want to mention here before we get into the break. We got Jeff Stein coming on in here. The last thing I do want to mention is, does anyone think for one second, that if this was a non-Christian case, that this was a, you know, Muslim, Jewish, any other religious faith, that if that was out there being preached on the 50-yard line, that they wouldn't find some way to rule completely and totally differently in this? Of course they would. This was only about promoting Christianity by the Supreme Court. Jeff Stein, when we come on back.
Jeff.
On the Civic Media Radio Network, it's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert. He's a noted author. You can find his books at totallyiowa.com in the Twin Cities, at Next Chapter Books as well. You can also hear the Iowa Business Report and the Iowa Politics Report from his radio station, KXEL in Cedar Falls, Waterloo. Jeff, and by the way, you can watch Jeff as well. If you do want to watch the show, it's Radio for Your Eyes on Facebook. Go to AM 950 Radio on Facebook or Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show on Facebook, and you can see Jeff Stein, who seems to be joining us from some sort of prison facility. Where are you at right now?
Well, I came to this prison facility thinking I'd find you, and you're still at your studio. Hello,
Bail.
Wisconsin. Congratulations on the expansion of the show. No, I'm actually at our radio station studios in the Cedar Rapids, Iowa metro area this afternoon.
Oh, they're so clean and shiny. Oh, I mean, how many radio stations you walk into and it's like, I don't even want to put my fingers near the walls.
And that's why it looks like a prison facility. This is how you build them nowadays. I suppose there are some posters of Rick Springfield down the hall I haven't seen yet, but this will do for now.
It's like the Stranger Things prison. Okay, so it is a production room and a radio station. Prison facility. I'm staying with that that termination. All right. Yeah. I want to bring up something that I saw this and it blew my mind because I was like, okay, this seems to imply something very strange has happened. We were rolling into this election cycle. Things were looking rough for the Democrats in regards to gas prices, inflation. Then came a week plus of Supreme Court rulings, which really changed the dynamic. The first race up on a national level was the Nebraska one seat. The current representative there had to resign. It was an open seat. Republicans have won this seat. I'm just going to run these numbers past you. 2008, 41 points. These are all the Republican margins of victory. 2008, 41 points, 10, 42, 12, 37, 14, 37, 16, 39, 18, 21, and 20, 22. Still a 20-plus margin of victory for the Republicans in this special election. It was four. It was a four-point. The total number of votes in now show a four-point margin in Nebraska 1, which is not a close to a toss-up seat. This is a very red district. Eastern Nebraska, everything not, including Omaha. It is a very reliable red district, and the Republican who had been winning by 20-plus points only won by four. Your thoughts, first of all, on Nebraska 1.
Well, when you look at 2020, the margin of victory was less than in prior years, but certainly not this. And so, as we have talked for many years, and to the new listeners to the program, we've talked for many years about the fact that you have to be careful about taking one election, one vote, and saying it's a harbinger for the entire year. Yes. However, to your point, this was the first test post end of the Supreme Court era of the rulings for this year, that it was this close, that's something in the water. And so now the Democrats who have been saying that this is what they need to run on, the Supreme Court, that's going to put a lot of wind in their sails, don't you think? Because again, the key to anger, and that's what a lot of people feel in the wake of these Supreme Court rulings, they feel anger. The key to anger is sustaining it. And that's a very hard emotion to sustain from June, July to November. But as you said, it was not looking good before. This may give Democrats something to at least test drive with audiences and see if it can make them forget the economic issues.
The other side of that election, which was very interesting, is there were a lot of Republicans, primarily it sounded like polling was suggesting moderate Republicans, who did not vote, who stayed back. Now, there could be a situation where, oh, we've got this in the bag. That could be the case. But I'm wondering if this January 6th hearing is having a ripple effect through moderate Republicans, especially when it's Republicans themselves who are out there saying, yeah, there was an attempted overthrow of the government here.
I don't think the January 6th hearings are having much of an impact on Republicans at this point, certainly not with this race, the one that you've just mentioned. I would suggest that it's the reason that you already posited. Oh, we've got this one in the bag. There's too much to do in the summer. I'm not going to show up. I don't think that you should read it too broadly. The thing with regard to January 6th, you do have a muddy middle of moderate Republicans, of independents, who once everything is distilled down may react to it. The folks who are on the left, this just simply confirms what they thought. The folks on the far right, they're still going to say it's a witch hunt and it doesn't matter what is shown. But when you get to a general election, the thing that might tip people over the edge to vote for a blue ticket as opposed to a red ticket might be the sum of everything with January 6th. I still think it's going to be much more of the economy, to a lesser degree, the Supreme Court rulings. But again, if you're somebody who has voted red in the past and you're not sure, this might be the thing, depending on what happens in the next 3 months of testimony, that might be the thing to put you over the top.
I actually disagree under this, guys. From what I have seen from Republicans in the post, end of Roe v. Wade, is either they're quiet, either they're in a safe enough district where they can talk about we're not going to have exceptions for rape, incest, or the life of the mother, or they are trying desperately to find some way to say, yeah, abortion is gone, but what we're going to do is we're going to try to increase social programs. See, we're actually moderates now. And I think it comes down to this. Outrage for Democrats usually lasts as long as sour cream. If the Democrats lose their fire on Roe v. Wade, the outrage over Roe v. Wade's overturning, then, yeah, it's going to fall back to the economy, and I think that's going to be trouble for the Democrats. But if the Democrats can harness this and stay angry, because they need to stay angry if they're going to correct any of this, if they're going to do that, then it is going to, I think, spell a lot of trouble for the Republicans. We got a race here in the Minnesota 1 race. Jim Hagedorn, the Republican representative down there, passed away because of cancer. That's an open seat. That comes up in here in August. If all of a sudden that seat, I mean, it's not nearly as overwhelmingly Republican as some people play it. I think it's like 2-4 points is what it's been the difference. And Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, who's a Democrat, held that seat for many years. So it really is more of a slightly leans our district. If the Democrats win that district by a substantial amount, I think now we're looking at some signs that there might actually be a problem for Republicans because of those rulings.
Well, I took your last question to be about January 6th more than anything else. With regard to the rulings, yeah, now you've got a different issue, because let's say you're running for the U.S. House and you're a Republican and you're asked about this. You already most likely have said you're pro-life. You can try to dodge it by saying, well, this is a state's rights issue now, and I believe in our republic, and so therefore, I don't have to deal with it because it doesn't come before me. It's a state's issue. I don't think you're going to get very far with that argument, okay? But you can try to make it. The trick is going to be on some of these other rulings. And the big thing between now and then, August is still soon enough, Matt, that you're going to have some pretty clear residual effect. What will some of these state Republicans do between now and November? Because that is going to be the true test of this. If, in fact, they go too far, if they try to reclaim everything too fast, that will have a backlash. I can tell you where I'm sitting in the state of Iowa, they already have had the governor who's up for re-election, strong position. She's already petitioned the Supreme Court to review a past ruling. Now that Roe is no longer precedent, the Supreme Court swatted that back. But in some of these states, and I include my state of Iowa, there's no talk of a special session, but what if there was? What if a governor in a state called a special session, the legislature rammed through a draconian, no exceptions rule? That would have huge backlash. The wise counsel, if I were a Republican or if I were a Republican strategist, I'd say do nothing until after November, because there's not much you can do except screw this whole thing up.
Well, and it brings up the trap. And if I can say where the Republican trap is with this, in states where abortion is now limited or even outlawed, let's go with Ohio. You have the 10-year-old rape victim out there. You know, all of a sudden the Republicans are the ones saying, no, the 10-year-old rape victim, somehow it's a blessing for her to have been raped and carry this baby to term. And, you know, and so they're in that trouble. Meanwhile, people can basically sit there and say, how draconian can you be? On the other side of it, Minnesota, which is basically our state laws actually go further than Roe v. Wade did and in protected even more than in Minnesota than it did on the state on the national level. You already had the problem for the Republicans here is you have too much red meat area where you have Republicans who get out there and they're like, no exceptions for rape, incest, life of the mother. They're all going to be outlawed. And that puts, I mean, if the Republicans are going to win in Minnesota, they've got to take the suburban seats. And it's just toxic for them. This is why you're not hearing a lot of them say a thing or else try to figure out some way they can be born again socialists, because they're trying to figure out some way that they can sell this, you know, that we're not going to try to overturn Roe v. Wade in Minnesota. We're going to basically, this is established law. They're trying to find some way to tap dance around this to prevent from having that far right extremist point of view be the representation for them in their races in the suburbs.
And that is clearly the thing that could screw it up for the Republicans, right? If you are pushing through something when it doesn't seem to be urgent, okay? In other words, you might have made the case for a trigger law for the Roe decision. You might have been able to make that case 3, 4, 5 months ago. We got to hurry to get something in place in case that it's overturned. Now it's overturned. So it's status quo unless you take action. Far better if you're a Republican to do nothing until after the election, get reelected, claim you therefore have a mandate for what you'll do in the regular session. But I did an interview with an elected official. It's a nonpartisan seat in Iowa this afternoon. And she said that she is, and these are not the same thing, but she was vacillating on how she actually felt. She said she was either pro-choice with a lot of limitations or pro-life with exceptions. And I dare say that's where a lot of people wind up being. The question is, where's the emphasis? And does one side go too far that then drives someone who might otherwise be receptive to the message to the other side?
Well, and then you get the problem of years of them saying no exceptions and all these things. And now all of a sudden they're nuancing their argument. It comes back to haunt them. The other ruling, which I think is interesting. Okay, we just had what was a pretty major accomplishment, a bipartisan gun safety bill that came through that put some regulations in trying to stop some of these gun slaughters. The Supreme Court ruling coming out on New York, which basically said, no, you can't really regulate guns in public places, period. Now followed by the tragic shooting amongst many that happened over the weekend, but the tragic one in Highland Park, Illinois, on the 4th of July parade. Mm-hmm. As much as Republicans, I think, were hoping to have put that issue to bed before the election, now that's back because of the Supreme Court and yet another high-profile shooting.
The Supreme Court case did not quite say what you just indicated. And this is a key distinction. What it said was the New York law said you had to justify why you needed a gun. And then it was up to a single elected official or not elected official. I mean, you know, it was, maybe it's an appointed official. The key is you can regulate. And this is what I think the new New York law has done. You can regulate the areas, but the potential for it being arbitrary in the old law is what threw it out. In other words, they were saying you had to justify why you, Matt McNeil, needed a gun. And then some person in government made that decision. And it was just not a standardized approach. And so that leads to New York now banning it all these places. But I think that is going to be upheld as constitutional, as opposed to the other one that was subject to just someone not liking the T-shirt you wore that particular day and denying you for no good apparent reason. That's what I think struck down, led to the striking down of the New York law in the Supreme Court decision.
What the heck's wrong with my T-shirt today? My God, I look pretty and nice at this point. My goodness.
Well, here's the thing. I am not in my normal studio. I can't see your T-shirt. It seems to be red. It was just a broad comment. Apparently, you took offense, which means I think you're feeling a little guilty about your apparel choice.
We have to take a break. Let's come on back here in just a moment. Jeff Stein joining us, the Matt McNeil Show, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Good to be with you. Jeff Stein, kind enough to join us right now as we were talking about national and presidential politics. Jeff, turning our attention towards the prosecution, possible prosecution of Donald Trump. Whereas we've had a lot focused, obviously, on January 6th, the reality is the one case that Trump is in really big trouble is in Georgia. Because whereas with a call with the Ukrainians where he says, I want you to do me a favor, though. You know, here he is. He's out. I need you to find me votes. And it's recorded and on the record. And, you know, it's pretty cut and dry what he was asking the state of Georgia to do, to cheat. And now they're starting to ramp up their investigation. A lot of people have looked and said, if you're really going to look at to hold Donald Trump accountable, Georgia is where they really could do it.
He was doing nothing more. Sorry, I turned the microphone off during the break. He was doing nothing more than basically saying, help me find my lost puppy. But instead of a lost puppy, it was, you know, 30,000 votes or something like that.
Make them up.
And by the way, Wisconsin, Matt does impressions.
If you've not heard
the Donald Trump impression, that was just a taste of it.
I heard cheese curds are delicious. I'm here for them.
I should just turn the microphone off again, shouldn't I? Do you remember, you were a young boy in shorty pants, but there was a tape from Watergate where the President Nixon was told, well, we need X amount of dollars, whatever, to pay somebody off. And he just simply said, we can get that. And that was the most damning statement that could have been, because he obviously, by that statement, knew how to get hush money, knew how to pay it, was on board with everything. He didn't say, I don't know nothing about gambling in this hall. It's the same sort of thing when he says, well, we just need to find votes. That's not just a statement like, well, boy, if we could just find some votes that haven't been counted. No, it was much more. And again, when you consider it's coming from the president, I heard a bit of your conversation with the audience about the Supreme Court ruling on school prayer before the break. And I most of what you said, I tend to agree with, because let's say you're the coach and you do a prayer by yourself and two kids ask if they can join. Well, if you want to play, you're now all of a sudden going to join as well. So in this case, if you've got the president of the United States saying to a state official, you need to help find me some votes, even if Trump were to say, well, I was just kind of speaking metaphorically, how did the Secretary of State interpret that? I think the same way most Americans would have interpreted it.
Well, and the difference between Wisconsin, what happened up here, and what happened in Georgia is, in Georgia, the Republicans there still put country over party. The Wisconsin jackass Republicans, they basically went out there and put party over the country. And so that's the difference. And they came forward with this evidence. But you do know legal stuff better. What do you have any idea about what the potential consequences, you know, would be on a state, if there was a state charge on this versus the federal charges?
Well, they've got to be able to show that he had the criminal intent to rig an election. And this is a difficult defense, but if I'm defending him, I'd say he says stuff like this all the time. You couldn't have taken it seriously. But again, that's a pretty thin defense. So you've got to really show that it was an attempt to override an actual election, as opposed to saying, well, you know, people always find ballots in trunks of cars that aren't counted, which I don't believe. But I'm just saying, I mean, that's you'd have to say that the Trump statement was made in a way that no rational person would take seriously.
But I mean, that was his entire presidency. I mean, he took a Sharpie to a hurricane map and said, "See, they did this." I mean, there comes a point where you can't say that, because literally everything he did was lunacy, but they kept insisting it was all serious, that he had the biggest crowd, the inauguration, that he really cared about any minority group or anything like that. No, he didn't. It's pretty clear by all the things that he did. He wanted to nuke a hurricane, for God's sakes. You know, it's hard, because when you say that, the first thing that these people had to do is come out and justify it. So I think you lose that argument, don't you? If every time he said something insane,
that's what I'm saying. The best you have as a lawyer in the defense is to say the statement was not to be taken seriously. Mm-hmm. And then you put it against the record of all the other things that you just mentioned. That's the trick. If you're the defense attorney, you're saying that the president of the United States was not to be taken seriously because he did not have the intention to force someone to commit a criminal act. Now, that's the argument you'd make. What's the chance that a jury in Georgia is going to buy it, especially when you look at the polls in Georgia, that they didn't take to their elected officials being attacked by the president of the United States, as evidenced by the fact that the Secretary of State and the governor both stood for re-election, renomination within their own parties and beat Trump-backed candidates. We'll see about the general election, but there was a bit of state pride, I'd say, at work there. And it may be the case again if that were to ever come to a jury.
Cassidy Hutchinson, in testimony, what do you think is more likely true? That Trump tried to grab the wheel of his own limo and drive to the Capitol, or that he was throwing food against the wall in the White House?
Food against the wall in the White House.
I have no doubt he did that on a daily basis.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, though, if it was a McDonald's hamburger, he might find that to be too much waste.
Well, he'd be licking the wall.
So there is that.
Okay? I'm so sorry, hamburger. Let me clean you up.
It's another impression. Again with the impression. The thing that testimony, Ms. Hutchinson's testimony, did was make Kevin McCarthy yet again regret his decision not to field another slate of committee members. Remember, he put forth his slate. Nancy Pelosi said, "I'm not going to seat any of them." And McCarthy thought, okay, fine, we're going to take our ball and go home. And therefore, there is no cross-examination. There is no balance. All the things they're complaining about, McCarthy could have participated with other individuals, other members, as opposed to Jim Jordan, for example, who could be called as a witness, but he didn't do it. It's yet another McCarthy miscalculation, which is why even if the Republicans win in November, I'm not so sure he becomes Speaker of the House, quite honestly.
I actually have some question whether they win. I will ask you this. Do you think the Justice Department will eventually come around and actually file some charges here?
Oh, depends on who holds Congress. I mean, truly, because unless this January 6th commission can finish its work by Election Day, if, in fact, the Republicans get the House, that commission never existed and you just won't see anything. So I guess it depends on how quickly they can finish their work. I'm not saying that they're dilly-dallying, but it also depends on who wins the election. That determines whether or not the Justice Department gets the information it needs to think about filing any charges.
I think the Democrats lose. They're going to just dump everything. It's just going to be like, they're just going to be a massive dump like they did with the Washington Post that one time. They're just going to give them all the information and let the media decide what to do with it. Jeff Stein, once again, I'll post the Iowa Politics Report. I'll also post this interview a little bit later on. Find his books over at totallyiowa.com as well as your favorite bookseller online. Jeff, and a pleasure. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Talk to you next week, Matthew.
Take care. Thank you very much to the network, to the fine folks at WAUK 540 AM and 101 FM, The Shaw. You're going to be, as well as also Denver Radio 92.7 FM, Madison, WTTN 1580 AM, Columbus. You got your own programming. We're back hour two up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, hour two of the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Did you see the weird orangish-yellow sky we had last night?
Yeah, that was odd because I had closed all my blinds for the evening, and all of a sudden, why is it yellow and orange outside there? So I checked it out. Yeah, that was odd looking. Kind of cool to see, though.
It was. It was a little less creepy than the green sky out to the west, out in Sioux Falls.
Yeah.
If you see the pictures of that.
Yeah, yeah. That not good for the storms.
No. Yeah. That when I see green skies, what that tells me is like a bunch of dirt or something is about to fall on us, because that's the only. I mean, I don't think green happens to without. You know, that's when I was down in Iowa, you'd see when the tornado came through, if you saw all of a sudden green skies or yellowish brown skies, that told you that was a tornado probably coming through if you had a tornado warning, because that was just throwing all that dirt up into the sky. So I don't know what was going on there. I did not see it because we had my son and his girlfriend stop on by coming back from Chicago, and obviously our attention, our focus was on them. But everyone, a lot of people posting on that, just with the weird storms and the sun as they come down. I posted some photos from the trip up north. We were way north of a storm. I'm not about to send my kids out with a thunderstorm nearby. But this was a storm that was down by Duluth, and we were up about an hour north of that, maybe 45 minutes up north of that. And we were looking down on it, and it made some spectacular photos because being that far north, you had the sun going down behind us, and so it kind of highlighted them. And as the sun dropped below and the different colors came through, I mean, it was really spectacular. And I had a few of those moments. I really had some nice ones there. But the yellow one, makes me isn't that like a Night of the Comet, zombie apocalypse, that sort of thing?
Yeah, yeah. When you get that yellowish orange, yeah, it did look kind of post-apocalyptic as you're looking through the windows, yeah.
It's interesting up north when I was up there, because I hadn't talked really about what I usually talk a little bit about the impressions after I spend some time up there. I will say the first thing that really kind of confused me was we were up there for the beginning of the 4th of July week, and I understand 4th of July was on the following Monday. But usually a lot of people will take a vacation and go on up there and have fun with it, you know, and go out there and start hitting the lake early, right? There was hardly anyone up there. I was stunned by that, you know, there was hardly anyone up there. And I can't quite figure that out. I don't think that's gas prices because, I mean, really, if you think about it, it's more cost effective probably than going, you know, 300 miles to some campsite. It's, you know, if you got a cabin, you go up there. Just there weren't a lot of people out. And it wasn't like the water wasn't warm enough to swim or anything. Fishing was good. I mean, I saw a few people out there fishing, but that was about it. I went into town. I think I've talked a little bit about Virginia. Virginia, Minnesota I like Virginia, Minnesota. My family's got a ton of history there. My great-grandfather was Charles B. Lenant. He ran the hospital up there for many years. My other great-grandfather, Emerson Duncan McNeil Sr., worked in the mines and was very successful over there. And they, you know, so there's a lot of history we have and connection to that community. And it's hard to go into that town at times because it's very different going into Virginia as opposed to going into like Hibbing or Ely. Where if you go to Hibbing, have you? When was the last time you were up in Hibbing? And last time, any time recently?
No time recently I can think of. No,
it's cute. Hibbing's cute. You drive in on the main road. You come. You what is it? 37? Is that 37? Minnesota 37 that cuts across from US 53 over towards Hibbing. You get in there. It's this cute area. The flower baskets, the flags. It looks like a relatively nice community that's thriving. But one of the things I notice is even in the buildings which are empty, you go past them and they're cleaned up. They don't look bad. They don't look shabby. They look like they're rent ready. That kind of thing. For the most part, that's what it's like in Ely too. Have you been up to Ely anytime? I mean, that's a haul.
Yeah, Ely's a ways up there. No, not in a while.
Ely's up there. It's same thing, although not as much. I think they're not as successful at times of keeping the empty buildings looking nice. But overall, it's a cute experience. Good restaurants, a lot of cute things for a town that small. There are very few towns that are that small that are that cute. I think about Ely, Virginia. I'm going to say this, and I think that this is a lot of it. Virginia is a town where it's because of its location. It's on US 53. It's of all the Iron Range cities that are up there. It is the one that's the most easily accessible because it's right there on 53. US 53, and as a matter of fact, it also has US 169 coming up into it. That's the road that heads up to Ely. They have in there, and it's not like they don't have mining. The mining seems to be going great. As a matter of fact, we had to move US 53 up there because the mining company had the rights to the land underneath the old US 53, and they're like, no, we're going to dig it out. And so the taxpayers of the entire state of Minnesota, by the way, Iron Range, you're welcome. We basically rebuilt this road, and it's actually quite cute and comes in on the big bridge, and it's really nice. Because of where it's located, there is a lot of big box retail stores. There's the Walmart, the Target, the Menards. You have a lot of big grocery stores there, which is their jobs. But generally, they're low-paying jobs. And I'm wondering if that has something to do with it. Because if you go into Virginia, Minnesota, and you take the first road into Virginia, you cross that bridge where it's over the Mine Pit Lake, and it's second. I believe it's second. And you take on the second there. That's not a pretty road. That is not a welcoming drive. No, you go past a lot of empty buildings, I will say this. I'm very grateful. The car that was on with no wheels on the blocks for 4 years has finally been moved. Thank you. Bravo. The least we can do. Lots of boarded up windows, lots of empty businesses. Yeah, it's not exactly a really ideal looking place. It's got its issues. You get on to Chestnut, which is their main street, and this is where it breaks my heart. Man, God, I mean, some of these old postcards of like the holidays in Virginia, Minnesota, with this gorgeous, thriving downtown, and there are some businesses that are down there that are doing fairly well, mainly towards the lakeside, which is not the side where a second comes in. You get down to second and Chestnut, and the first like three blocks, half the buildings are like three-story boarded up, look like they're, Shag and Scoob should be investigating them. Oh, look out, Scoob! It's an Iron Ranger! That would be the ghost of that episode. I mean, it would be the Iron Ranger.
Yeah, it's gotta be.
He's got pasties he throws at you. Watch out for the wild rice pancakes. Oh, but Scoob. Oh, he'd be loving that ghost.
At least he's a super nice and polite ghost.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily. So I think the problem you have, and by the way, that is the main route in. I mean, if you drive into Virginia, if you don't turn into Second, the thing you come into is that mall area where all the it used to be called the Thunderbird Mall. I don't know what it's called now. They changed the name because it was, you know, a bunch of white guys using Native American iconic, you know, imagery that doesn't work. But you go there and it's, you know, you have the big box store. And there are a lot of people there. And the reason why that it's they're successful, those stores have a lot of cars in them, is because I have been in the stores when the family's coming down from Crane Lake or from Ely, because this is the nearest big box store, and they're coming down to pick up, you know, a week's or month's worth of supplies, you know, in Virginia. And so you do get some benefit there, but it doesn't seem to, you know, really convey over. And, you know, I go to Olcott Park, which is in Virginia, which is quite nice. It's a cute little area over there. It's right by the hospital, near where many of my family members are buried over there in the cemetery. And there are some cute neighborhoods. But once again, it's your main road into town. The main road is Second, and you come down Second, it doesn't look like a town you would want to be in. And you get down to Chestnut, which should be their iconic main street, and it looks like a demilitarized zone for the first three freaking blocks. And it gets somewhat nicer. I mean, there's some good places there. I wish the old Mako Theater was still in place. I saw The Empire Strikes Back there at the old Mako Theater in Virginia. That was great. Remember that one?
Memorable, yeah.
Oh, that was great. You know, Peps is down. Peps Bakery, fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah, the pizza bread they got there, mwah, love it. Love the pizza. It's, you know, there are some nice things there. It is. It just is when I go there, and I think it because it's because there's so much more interest in having the big box stores, I just don't think it conveys over. And do you know what I mean? Do you kind of get the point of what I'm talking about there? It just is, I think it stifles the growth, and it stifles the niceness of the town, because, you know, the town is much more there about being a destination for people to come pick up supplies as opposed to a destination of people, hey, let's go into Virginia and have fun.
Yeah, yeah. Probably not people going into town saying, I'll spend a day shopping in Virginia or wherever else, where you can't really do that if it's just Menards and Walmart. And
well, you can, but it's
a different experience.
Yeah, you're buying it for like going to a cabin or something like that.
Yeah, as you said, you're getting supplies. You're not shopping as a more casual kind of fun activity to do.
Yeah. I could go. Hibbing is cute. I mean, when I go up there, we'll say, where do you want to go? We don't want to do a day trip. Do we want to go to Ely? Do we want to go to Duluth? Do you want to go over to Hibbing? They're all cute. And it breaks my heart, because this just seems to be getting worse there in Virginia. And I'm concerned about whether or not the entire downtown, which is a cute downtown, is going to be able to survive that kind of growth that's happening there, where it's the jobs that were there, and what I mean is, once again, the mining is there. But you used to have the local pharmacy. You used to have the local lumber yard. You used to have the local clothing store. You used to have the local grocery store. You used to have all those places. There used to be a grocery store out on the back road to 53. And this tells you how long I've been going up there. When I was a kid, my mom would go in there. We'd drive out to the cab in northern Minnesota from Rhode Island, which was a haul, in a big Plymouth Fury station wagon. Don't tell me about gas mileage. My God. So we drove across to go get to Minnesota, got there, and the first thing that they did, my mom did, was literally buy out every can of tomato paste, sauce, anything you could. We went into those grocery stores, and we just ransacked them. Just anything we could use, we got. And because that's what you did. And we ate good. Don't get me wrong. We ate great up there. All homemade. No, none of those TV dinners or pizzas or anything. No. Just roasts and turkeys and pasta. Just great stuff. But that was, you know, what you were doing back then. What were we doing? We were going into a local grocery store. We were paying for the local grocery clerk, the stocker, the owner, the butcher, the produce guy. All of them were getting a cut of our big, fairly large check that came in. Now it gets sent down to the corporate headquarters every night. and they get their pay, but it doesn't, it's a fixed pay, it's a fixed salary, it's not, it's a different kind of realm. That's the point I'm making, is that it's not that it's not nice that these businesses are there and they definitely bring people in. It just is, you don't have that insulated business model, which gives the pharmacist and all his clerks all the a good salary and a good paycheck. Now it's, you know, basically $25,000 a year and you're working twice as hard. And most of the money goes to the corporate headquarters. It's not the local lumber yard or the local hardware store anymore, or the local appliance store. You know, it changes. And I think because of that, because we're looking at a large box store corporate environment, that's what's hurting that town most of all, is there's just not the extra money that you would see within a town. A town like Hibbing has to bring people out there, because it's not easy. Go look at a map. It's not easy to get to Hibbing. It's not easy. It is a haul to get to Ely. You know, even Duluth as a metro area, a larger metro area, you know, you've got to give them a reason to go out there to go to Duluth. And they do. Duluth is cute. I like Duluth a lot. But I think Virginia, I think they need to kind of step back and say, okay, how do we make sure that we're not just the place where people come stock up on toilet paper, fertilizer, and screws, that we're the place that people come in and our citizens can get a good wage, can have a good life, and the city doesn't look like it's you know, on its last limbs. And it's hard. I have spent a good chunk of my radio career out in rural America, and I've driven through towns. God, you go through Iowa towns. Holy God. The only two businesses left would be one small diner and the co-op, and everything else was closed. You'd go down a main street, a cute main street with these great buildings, empty, 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 for sale, for lease. Nothing in any of these towns, over and over again. It's what's really hard is just to see it's happening in a city the size of Virginia, and it's happening at an alarming rate. And that's the only thing I can think of what's happening there, is that it's just, you're not getting, the wages aren't keeping up with the population to where the community stays nice. It's just more of a way station on the way to your eventual destination. And I think that's what's hurting it. Anyway, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. I would love nothing more than be able to. I wish I had win the lottery and I could go up there. I'd buy one of those buildings and I'd turn it into an arts co-op, and I would bring in artists and I would allow them, you know, to stay there and make their art there, and, you know, just turn the downtown into as much art as I could. I would also buy that freaking Mako Theater and I'd get that thing open again. I think it's a church now, but that theater was spectacular. Get that open again. And yeah, I understand. You open a single screen movie theater in America today, you're losing money. I don't care. I'd run it. I'd get the lights fixed on it. I'd make it look nice and get that town downtown glowing again. I would do that if I could. I don't have the money. I wish I did. I wish I did. I'd do it in a heartbeat. Because I remember, like I said, I've seen the pictures of the glory days of that town. And it's hard to watch it now. I mean, have you been to a town where you just look around and it's like, what are you guys doing here?
What's going on? My first radio job, Atlantic, Iowa, was kind of what you exactly described, where big box, even some of the old big box stores, when I had moved down there, it closed. I know they had some pride in Kmart. Even that closed, and now it was pretty much a Walmart, and that was it.
Yeah.
They had a downtown area which was maybe half occupied with buildings, a lot of really cute buildings that would make great stores, but most of them were out of business, for sale, for lease signs, and yeah, it's just too bad. It's not unique really to anywhere. It just happens everywhere in rural America now.
I was in Eldora, Iowa. In Iowa Falls, they opened up a Walmart. And they systematically went around to every one of the small towns around them and drove their – they went out – we had a local pharmacy. We had a local pharmacy right in downtown Eldora. been there for years. They went in there, caught every one of their prices, wrote them down or something. They went in there, took all their prices, went in, and then the flyer to Eldora was, it sells there for here. Come up, drive up here, and you'll get it cheaper. And, of course, the second they drove that pharmacy out of business, prices went right back up.
And they really do nothing to be involved in the community. Like, I remember that station, just about every business in town advertised with us, except the Walmart, of course.
Yeah.
So they really weren't investing anything back into the community. It wasn't just us. They weren't really participating.
It's a business, man.
Yeah,
and they,
yeah.
And we weren't, Eldora wasn't the only one. I mean, it was every town that town, within 20 miles of that one Walmart got, you know, kind of ran down. And it can happen. And don't get me wrong, in Iowa, and we're not going to bash on Iowa, there are some very cute towns in Iowa that they have done a very good job of being able to do like Hibbing does, do like Ely does. These small towns that create a really unique character to themselves, and they thrive, and people like going there. It just is, it's hard when you watch it, and you can see, it's like, guys, do you not, I mean, I'm up here twice a year, and I can see what's going on. Do you guys not see what's going on? Are you hoping it just gets better? Are you hoping someone wins the lottery and then goes out there and spends all the money and you can do it? I wouldn't hold my breath on that. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. God, the White Sox and the Twins are going back and forth. It's 8-8 now again. White Sox just got another two-run homer.
You just said it was 8-6 during the break. Did they put Pagan in? We were just chatting about that.
It's in the eighth. I would hope they didn't put Pagan in. Oh, please don't tell me they put Pagan in at this point.
Yeah, look at that. Oh, two earned runs already. No,
McGill.
Oh,
they put McGill in.
That McGill.
Pandemic recovery has far-reaching effects on the national housing market, increasing demand for more space and driving up price homes. A report released in June on the state of housing in the U.S. estimates the annual income needed to afford a median Twin Cities house is now almost $104,000, nearly $21,000 more than the median Twin City household makes. That's not a good sign. The report by the Harvard Joint Center of Housing Studies prices the median Twin Cities home at $377,672, up 12% from last year. The report found the share of Minnesota's renters' households spending a concerningly high share of their incomes on rent has increased to 2009 since 2019. It is truly a remarkable time in housing. Senior researcher associate for JCHS during the event unveiling the report, from the soaring cost of housing to record low supplies, the surge in demand for construction response dragged down the supply chain delays. Now high inflation and interest rates are attempting to tame it. High demand for housing and cheap borrowing have prompted steep increases in home prices in recent years, both in Minnesota and nationally. The estimated annual income needed to afford the median house in the United States rose a whopping $28,000 from $79,600 to $107,600 between April 2021 and April 2022. U.S. renter households out of them, and they've been rented out of the house market in just 1 year. The math for many renters would even be tougher now than it was just a few weeks ago, as interest rates have risen to roughly a percent to average of 5.7% in late June, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. In Minnesota, it's not just the Twin Cities where average household prices are home ownership. In every larger Minnesota metro area, the income needed to afford a typical home is more than the median household makes. You know, this is what are you getting? It's demand. But it's not demand from you. We like to think that what this is, it's capitalism, and it is. It's the ugly side of capitalism. It really is the ugly side of capitalism. What you get is you get people who want to buy it as a rental property, or they want to buy it because they want it to be an Airbnb, and they're not just doing it to houses. They're doing it to apartments too. I mean, there are a handful of holding companies that own an insane amount of property, and they're looking to buy. And one person told me that they will, because some people will say, I don't want to sell it to one of these rental companies. I don't want to sell my house. I want to sell my house to a family so they can grow in there. They've actually kind of created these fake dummy corporations where it's like Barb and Marcia Watson LLC. And so it's Barb and Marcia, we just want to buy the house, and it's actually part of their company that's trying to buy it for rental reasons. You can build the low-income housing, but the speculators go in there, grab it, putting a few new flowers in the front yard and then charging another $45,000 for it the next day. Hot area. You can come by here. I don't know. I mean, the way to fix this would be to, dramatically start increasing the amount of housing available. But the minute that housing becomes available, the people who are buying it generally aren't the people that need it. And they're driving the rates up right away. I don't know how you're going to fix that. It's kind of the way things are going. I bought my house in Hopkins in 2000 for $160,000. My dad looked at me with an incredulous look in his face. Matt, you're paying $160,000 to live in Hopkins? In Hopkins? $160,000 to live in Hopkins? I think my house now is worth $405,000. There's no way on the planet we could afford to buy this house in that market. And between my wife and I, we do okay. We couldn't afford to live this in this neighborhood. It was when we bought this house, it was a bunch of original owners starter homes, and now, yeah. I don't know how you fix this problem. I don't know how you fix it, but you got to do something, because right now it's the people who are going in and buying it are not the people who need to get the housing. They're getting priced out, and it reminds me a little bit of like concert tickets, where it's the brokers are able to go in there first, buy out all the properties, and basically everyone else is like, well, I want to buy a place so I can raise kids. Well, it sucks to be you, doesn't it? Well, here's a townhome. Hope you like shared walls, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy of what it is. They're just snapping them all up, and they're just looking at it as an investment for their portfolio, essentially.
I think the real estate companies are like, hey, we don't care. They get paid. We get paid one way or the other. And they're paying $20,000 more than the family could. So I'll just take that, and I'll pocket the money. I think that's a lot of it. But I don't know how you fix it unless you start glutting the market with housing. And here's the other ugly side of this. If I'm the person that owns all these properties, right? And the city comes out and says, we're going to start a new initiative to where we're going to basically rent out a whole bunch of properties. What do? You start cutting loose your properties to drop the prices, to basically tell the city, well, hey, we're not going to be able to get any value. You're not going to get a return on investment to sell these properties. And so, there you go. It's an attempt. I think it's going to be an attempt to control the housing markets for decades to come. Needless to say, It's nice to know that we're going to have large swaths of the metro area, which are just going to be B&B Airbnb rentals, for God's sakes, or rental homes, which used to be homes you could own, which, you can rent, but there's no way in the world you could eventually buy the thing. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's talk about what happened in Minneapolis on the 4th of July when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. Gary is in Minneapolis. Gary, welcome on in. Thanks for holding.
Hi, Matt. Yeah, I was worried that my brother lives in the woods. I'm in the Two Harbors area, way out of town, and I go up there every year on the shore. And this year, my sister-in-law up there suggested I go to Virginia and see the mines. That's what I'm going to do when I go up there, and it'd be interesting. So you've been off the air a week. I wonder where you went.
Well, I've got I'm able to go up to Sand Lake up there and be able to hang out and enjoy that. But no, it's I encourage you to go there. But do me a favor, try to find some of the local businesses. Okay.
Okay, I was going to ask you. You guys still got a lot of family up there around Virginia?
Some, not nearly as many as we used to. We used to have a lot of family up there, but they've just a lot of them have passed away.
Yeah, you're talking about Ely too. That's a long drive in the middle of nowhere to go up there.
But it's cute. Have you ever been up for Blueberry Festival?
No, I just went that time. It took forever, and I'm getting scared. I see hardly cars on the way up. But I'm going to tell you real quick before I go. I went to Door County last month, the first time, and they have these fish boils there. It ain't a city because of the North Shore, but it was really interesting to see it. And these fish boils, the Norwegian immigrants did on the Door Colony, they boil it in water, so it's kind of interesting.
It is Wisconsin. They could be boiling them in beer. I have had that, too. Thanks, Gary. I appreciate the phone call. Anywhere you're near one of the Great Lakes, Brett, have you ever had the fish boil? You ever done the fish boil?
No, I have not. That sounds good, though.
Or the whitefish when they do a whitefish fry. Oh, delicious. Anywhere you're by the Great Lakes, I mean, the fish are, they're so big waters, they fish are, it's like schools. You know, you can pick a ton of them up. Delicious. Delicious. Gary, have a great vacation up there. Go up and visit Minnesota. Minnesota kicks butt. Minnesota kicks butt. And there's a lot of towns out there that they're cute. Go out there and visit them and spend your money locally. Yes, it's easy going to Chili's, but no. Try to find someplace a little more local. The money will go a lot farther. Mark my word. 952-946-6205. So, a friend of mine brought up a great point about the kind of the chaos that happened on the 4th of July in Minneapolis, where people were firing off fireworks and the police didn't seem to be responding. And then it ended up with, you know, was it 7 people being shot in Boom Island Park area? And he made this great point. He goes, one of the reasons why you probably want to fire off fireworks. Now, notice the city of Minneapolis did not fire off fireworks this year. They said there was construction going on in Boom Island, as well as also they said that had some staffing issues. But if you do have a major fireworks display, what happens? People stop. People are not looking for, they're out there waiting for the fireworks to start. They're a captive audience for an hour or so while they watch fireworks going on off. And then you generally have a police presence there where people are leaving, and it's not, you basically have streets, a lot of people trying to get out of town, so you can't just be driving up and down the streets. He said, you know, really, if you want to look at one of the reasons why these problems happen is the fact that Minneapolis didn't have fireworks kind of opened it up. There's like, okay, there's no one coming into the downtown. You guys need something to do. Fireworks that we can get are pretty cheap. Well, we're going to go set them off and we'll be done like that. And yeah. Now, I will say this, all the people who fired off fireworks at the police, and they're on tape doing so, I'm going to say expect a knock on the old door here before too long, because they will find you on that. And I'm not going to sit here and condone bad behavior. There was a lot of freaking knuckleheads running around with fireworks. But if you're going to try to act like Minneapolis is there everywhere else, they fired off fireworks cleanly. Oh, please. I have been in small town America on the 4th of July. I have been out there with the fireworks going on off. The one guy that buys some, you know, the huge, you know, ordnance and sets that off. My goodness. I mean, I've been in communities that have had plenty of fires, plenty of injuries. There's always, in small town America, there's always someone who gets hurt every year because someone fired a fire, you know, a bottle rocket or someone at someone else. So don't act like this is some sort of only in Minneapolis. No, this happens. It was fairly aggressive in Minneapolis, that's for sure. But I'm also going to make the point. Let me read some of the story here. This is a Star Tribune story on this. City and Police Administration first acknowledged the violence at a news conference on late Tuesday afternoon when Mayor Fry said, "This is conduct that should not be acceptable in any city. The kind of violence, the recklessness, in some cases, idiot behavior that we saw shouldn't be tolerated. Let me be clear, it will not be tolerated." He said the police and the city leaders cannot fight this type of crime alone. If you're the parents of the children who were out last night, you need to know where they are. If you have friends that are involved in some of the horrible conduct, you won't be seeing. You need to be setting them straight, like a Captain America PSA video, there, isn't it? So you screwed up. Interim Police Chief Amelia Huffman said this was an extremely challenging situation with a very large and hostile crowd. People were shooting commercial-grade fireworks at first responders. She said the violence took place as we were meant to remember the celebrate true the revolutionary idea that every person has an unalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But there were those in the community who chose to engage in destructive, damaging, and dangerous behavior and deprived others of those very rights. From 9 p.m. to Monday at 4 a.m. Tuesday, it was what Fry called a substantial case of whack-a-mole, with more than 1,300 calls were made on 911 with 80 officers on duty. Now, I'm going to bring up a point here, okay? two things. First of all, that 1,300 calls, a lot of them, from what I've understood, were in the same area. There were people who were saying every person on the block was calling 911, and the police were not responding. Now, I've seen some videos where police did respond, but there were a lot of places where it was 2-3 hours of fireworks going off outside of people's homes and multiple people calling 911, and police did not show up. Now, I would say 80 officers in a city of the Minneapolis, you should have some results. It's not like you have six guys out there. You have 80. But I also will say, didn't we have a Minnesota Supreme Court ruling on this that basically said the problem here is Mayor Fry? That the city council has allotted you the money. You're the dude that's got to hire these people. If you're short on police officers, you need to hire them. So whose fault is that? You know, it's one on one side of it, you want to say, oh, it's chaos and recklessness. Well, the police were called multiple times and they didn't show up. But police have a hard job. Oh, for God's sakes, what is it? You know, if you know, it's you want, if all you're going to do is make excuses for the police officers, when once again, it seems to me you had 80 officers. There's just a lot of calls that weren't getting addressed. And I'm sorry. I do agree with the point of, you know, that parents, if your kids are out there, it's 12 o'clock on a Monday night, you probably, your kid's not doing anything good. You probably want to address that. But at the same time, I will also say that there seems to be more questions on what, you know, the police response to this and the lack of response in some cases. And this was allowed to get going further and further and further, which goes back to the first point, which I made, which I thought was actually a good one when I thought about it. If you would have actually had the fireworks, you would have a ton of people coming into town. You wouldn't have had all these people being able to run around. You would have had police around in a more, you know, controlling way. Is the mistake here the fact that you just didn't have the regular fireworks as you probably should have? Park police said 18-year-old suffered, three 18-year-olds suffered a major injury. 17-year-old and 22-year-old were also hospitalized. This is after a gunfire exploded at Boom Island Park, where there's at 10:20 p.m. there was up to 10,000 people, and they had the city's fourth mass shooting in 2 years. Park board spokesman Robin Smothers said the victims were hospitalized, several in serious condition. Huffman said the police department plans to work with Park Police to look at ways to deny access to those areas for folks gathering after hours. Prevention is worth a pound of cure. Minneapolis had at least 12 shootings and stabbing from Monday afternoon to early Tuesday. Besides the Boom Island Park casualties, two men were shot in the north side, two women injured on 19th and Nicollet. Man was seriously injured by gunfire at Gold Medal Park as well. Dan Zeller, whose home overlooks Boom Island Park, said a bullet came through the main living area, ricocheted off a kitchen island, and lodged in the back of the couch. That's because they're freaking idiots that fire guns into the sky as kind of a pseudo firework on these nights. That would be my guess. People are shooting fireworks at each other, so normally, and also normally in the sky, people just kind of show up and becomes a spectacle. He estimated kind of 1,000 people at one point, well, most had left before the gunfire. Zeller said he reviewed the home surveillance video and counted pretty close to 100 shots. And like I said, there's people just pulling out a gun at that point and firing them in the sky. There's a lot of dichotomy here. On one side of it, you say, oh, well, you know, the police have a hard job. Well, it doesn't sound like they showed up. But there was a lot of reasons why they didn't show up. It's, wow, these fireworks, these people with fireworks are out of control. But how many Republicans have said, we're going to make fireworks completely legal next year, all fireworks? Really? Wow, are you trying to burn half the city down? Maybe they are. They're Republicans. Republicans would probably cheer in glee if half the city of Minneapolis would burn down. Cheer with glee. Probably. You have one side of it, it's a, you know, hey, we probably need to round up the guns. Oh, well, why aren't they rounding up the guns in Minneapolis? But then you start rounding up the guns. What do you mean you're going to round up the guns? You can't do that. Our guns are beautiful. It's like I said, it's a mess of a story, but the entire point of this story, and I want to make sure we understand this. The entire point of the story is to counter the Roe v. Wade ruling. It is. Now, I'm saying that there's some bad things there. But why is this story all of a sudden? Some kids were running around firing off fireworks. Police didn't respond. All this. Why is this out there? Because Republicans are desperate to get back on the crime and gas prices messaging after the Supreme Court ruling. This is not the only story. I mean, here in the last 24 hours, news, these are news headlines. Frustrated Democrats. Biden powerless. Democrats asking why Biden not doing more. Democrats already expecting massive losses in November. My God, these are news stories that are clearly driving a narrative. Because if we go back to what Stein and I talked about in Nebraska 1, if Roe v. Wade has indeed shifted the argument 10 points, and that is, once again, we're talking about a 22-point race that was now a 4-point race. That's 18 points. I'll give it a little bit. Let's just say Roe v. Wade swings the voting scale 10 points. The Republicans have no chance at winning the Minnesota House, have no chance at holding the Minnesota Senate, and Governor Walz is going to win another term. And they know this. This is why this story is being, in my mind, reported as chaos in the streets, as bad as it was in the aftermath of George Floyd. Because it's not about whether it was as bad as the aftermath of George Floyd. It's because the people are trying to drive a narrative to get people off of the true outrage you should feel at the Supreme Court ruling after ruling after ruling. And if you're not willing to go on out there and keep your outrage on those rulings going, if they can somehow convince you, tolerate losing control of your women's bodies, tolerate prayer in public schools now, tolerate guns everywhere, because this other stuff is going, they have a chance. So, yeah, arrest the people that were involved. You know, if you're going to do this, by the way, I can point to at least four or five rural communities where there's also been stories of gunfire, fireworks being fired at people's houses, injuries caused by fireworks. I'm presuming you guys are going to send the forces out to arrest all those people as well. Because, I mean, if this is a crisis, we need to deal with all of them, right? But the reality is, don't mistake what's going on right now in this country. There is a massive corporate media narrative that's trying to push the idea that we've got to get the Roe v. Wade ruling off the table. So any story like this is going to be exaggerated beyond. It was disaster. It was the Hindenburg wrapped with the Challenger explosion, wrapped with the George Floyd protest, wrapped with vampires, and then the zombie apocalypse. It was the worst thing ever. That's the tone they're going to take. And that is the freaking tone these people have taken as they're reporting on this stuff. Save your outrage for the election. This stuff, Mayor Fry, hire the freaking cops. You're supposed to do that. The Supreme Court said you had to. Department of Justice, can you finish up on this overview of what you're doing with the Minneapolis Police Department? Because it sure would be nice to get that cleaned up. And I'd like to have some harsh standards for you. We probably should revisit the idea of whether or not we should have fireworks displays or not. I think Minneapolis should have fireworks displays because it keeps people from doing this. But then I think we also should have a debate on whether or not how much fireworks should be available to the mass public because we have this. And sure, maybe it is time for us to start rounding up guns, all the guns, in rural Minnesota as well as in the urban areas that are owned illegally. All of them in rural areas as well as urban. Yep. But you also have all those Supreme Court rulings which really violated all of our rights. And you shouldn't forget about those because that, if you don't start fixing that today, it won't get fixed for 100 years. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. The Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. No, it comes down to this. I mean, you're going to have a lot of people that want to keep this election close. And so you have been a palatable amount of stories talking about that the Democrats are doomed ever since that Roe v. Wade story, because they've got to convince people to that there's no point in being outraged. And the reality is that if that initial outrage from that Roe v. Wade ruling stays with the Democrats, Republicans are going to get annihilated in November. It doesn't help. I mean, it doesn't freaking help. The Democrats can't get their damn messaging right. I mean, how many times is like, oh my gosh, there's this bad thing that happens. Make a donation. If that's all you're doing, you're failing. And that's all the Democrats are doing. Oh gosh, what a horrible ruling. Donate. My God, I'm like everyone else. I'm getting 6, 7, 8 donation requests. Stop it. Just stop it.
Nobody likes lovable losers.
Eh? Stop acting like that's the only point here. Yeah. No, get outraged and make a point. You know, I've talked about that. Where is the messaging from the Democrats right now? You got an attorney general on the Republican side who, my guess is going to let those cops who murdered George Floyd go, saying, we've punished them enough. Might be my guess. Why haven't you gone after him on that? You got Kim Crockett, the worst Secretary of State candidate I've ever seen in my entire freaking life. Where's your messaging against her, tying her to all the rest of them? My God, the Jensen Burke campaign is a cornucopia of stupidity. Where's your messaging on that? Where's your messaging holding Republicans accountable for the catastrophe of the pandemic over the last 2 years in rural Minnesota? Where is your messaging pointing out that, oh, gas prices are high? Blame the gas companies, because it's a private sector and they're charging what they want to charge as they take taxpayer dollars in subsidies. You need to do a much better job. And the only thing you guys look at on the Democratic side right now is when something bad happens, is make a donation. Shut up and get off your asses and start working, damn it. You've got real fire and outrage. The point of that is not to bolster your bank accounts. It's to go win at the polls. So stop with the crap messaging. Get off your asses and get out there and fight. Because if you're not going to do this, I mean, my God, I think November is far easier for the Democrats to win than they want to admit. But they've got to get out there and fight. And you got to counterpoint this messaging. The Devil's Radio folks are up next. Native Roots are after that. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.